Chapter 35. Babalichai ceased speaking. Lingard shifted his feet a little, uncrossed his arms, and shook his head slowly. The narrative of the events in Sambor, related from the point of view of the astute statesman, the sense of which had been caught here and there by his inattentive ears, had been yet like a thread to guide him out of the somber labyrinth of his thoughts. And now he had come to the end of it, out of the tangled past into the pressing necessities of the present. With the palms of his hands on his knees, his elbows squared out, he looked down on Babalichai, who sat in a stiff attitude, inexpressive and mute as a talking doll, the mechanism of which had at length run down. "You people did all this," said Lingard at last, "and you will be sorry for it before the dry wind begins to blow again. Abdullah's voice will bring the Dutch rule here." Babalichai waved his hand towards the dark doorway. "There are forests there. Lakamba rules the land now. Tell me, Tuan, do you think the big trees know the name of the ruler?" "No. They are born, they grow, they live and they die, yet know not, feel not. It is their land." "Even a big tree may be killed by a small axe," said Lingard, dryly. "Andy, remember, my one-eyed friend, that axes are made by white hands. You will soon find that out, since you have hoisted the flag of the Dutch." "Ewa," said Babalichai, slowly. "T is written, that the earth belongs to those who have fair skins and hard but foolish hearts. The farther away is the master, the easier it is for the slave, Tuan. You were too near. Your voice rang in our ears always. Now it is not going to be so. The great Raja in Batavia is strong, but he may be deceived. He must speak very loud to be heard here. But if we have need to shout, then he must hear the many voices that call for protection. He is but a white man. If I ever spoke to Padalolo, like an elder brother, it was for your good, for the good of all," said Lingard with great earnestness. "This is a white man's talk," exclaimed Babalichai, with bitter exultation. "Know you? That is how you all talk, while you load your guns and sharpen your swords. And when you are ready, then to those who are weak you say, 'Obey me and be happy, or die.' You are strange, you white men. You think it is only your wisdom, and your virtue and your happiness that are true. You are stronger than the wild beasts, but not so wise. A black tiger knows when he is not hungry, you do not. He knows the difference between himself and those that can speak. You do not understand the difference between yourselves and us who are men. You are wise and great, and you shall always be fools." He threw up both his hands, stirring the sleeping cloud of smoke that hung above his head, and brought the open palms on the flimsy floor on each side of his outstretched legs. The whole hut shook. Lingard looked at the excited statesman curiously. "Appa, Appa, what's the matter?" he murmured, soothingly. "Whom did I kill here? Where are my guns? What have I done? What have I eaten up?" Babalichai calmed down, and spoke with studied courtesy. "You, Tuan, are of the sea, and more like what we are. Therefore I speak to you all the words that are in my heart. Only once has the sea been stronger than the Raja of the sea. You know it, do you?" said Lingard, with pained sharpness. "Hi. We have heard about your ship and some rejoiced. Not one. Amongst the whites, who are devils, you are a man. Trimakasi. I give you thanks," said Lingard, gravely. Babalichai looked down with a bashful smile, but his face became saddened directly, and when he spoke again it was in a mournful tone. "Had you come a day sooner, Tuan, you would have seen an enemy die. You would have seen him die poor, blind, unhappy, with no son to dig his grave, and speak of his wisdom and courage. Yes, you would have seen the man that fought you in Karamata many years ago die alone but for one friend. A great sight to you." "Not to me," answered Lingard. "Did not even remember him till you spoke his name just now. You do not understand us. We fight, we vanquish, and we forget." "True, true," said Babalichai, with polite irony. "You whites are so great that you disdain to remember your enemies. No, No. He went on, in the same tone, you have so much mercy for us, that there is no room for any remembrance. Oh, you are great and good. But it is in my mind, that amongst yourselves you know how to remember. Is it not so, Tuan? Lingard said nothing. His shoulders moved imperceptibly. He laid his gun across his knees, and stared at the flintlock absently. Yes, went on Babalatchi, falling again into a mournful mood. Yes, he died in darkness. I sat by his side, and held his hand, but he could not see the face of him who watched the faint breath on his lips. She, whom he had cursed, because of the white man, was there too, and wept with covered face. The white man walked about the courtyard making many noises. Now and then he would come to the doorway and glare at us who mourned. He stared with wicked eyes, and then I was glad that he who was dying was blind. This is true talk. I was glad, for a white man's eyes are not good to see when the devil that lives within is looking out through them. Devil, hey? Said Lingard, half aloud to himself, as if struck with the obviousness of some novel idea. Babalatchi went on. At the first hour of the morning he sat up he so weak, and said plainly some words that were not meant for human ears. I held his hand tightly, but it was time for the leader of brave men to go amongst the faithful who are happy. They of my household brought a white sheet, and I began to dig a grave in the hut in which he died. She mourned aloud. The white man came to the doorway and shouted. He was angry. Angry with her, because she beat her breast, and tore her hair, and mourned with shrill cries as a woman should. Do you understand what I say, Tuan? That white man came inside the hut with great fury, and took her by the shoulder, and dragged her out. Yes, Tuan. I saw Omer dead, and I saw her at the feet of that white dog who has deceived me. I saw his face gray, like the cold mist of the morning. I saw his pale eyes looking down at Omer's daughter beating her head on the ground at his feet. At the feet of him who is Abdullah's slave. Yes, he lives by Abdullah's will. That is why I held my hand, while I saw all this. I held my hand, because we are now under the flag of the Orang Blanda, and Abdullah can speak into the ears of the great. We must not have any trouble with white men. Abdullah has spoken, and I must obey. That's it, is it? Growled Lingard in his mustache. Then in Malay, it seems that you are angry, O Babalatchi. No, I am not angry, Tuan, answered Babalatchi, descending from the insecure heights of his indignation into the insincere depths of safe humility. I'm not angry. What am I to be angry? I am only an Orang Laut, and I have fled before your people many times. Servant of this one, protected of another, I have given my counsel here and there for a handful of rice. What am I, to be angry with a white man? What is anger without the power to strike? But you whites have taken all. The land, the sea, and the power to strike. And there is nothing left for us in the islands, but your white men's justice, your great justice, that knows not anger. He got up and stood for a moment in the doorway, sniffing the hot air of the courtyard, then turned back and leaned against the stay of the ridge pole, facing Lingard who kept his seat on the chest. The torch, consumed nearly to the end, burned noisily. Small explosions took place in the heart of the flame, driving through its smoky blaze strings of hard, round puffs of white smoke, no bigger than peas, which rolled out of doors in the faint draft that came from invisible cracks of the bamboo walls. The pungent taint of unclean things below and about the hut grew heavier, weighing down Lingard's resolution and his thoughts in an irresistible numbness of the brain. He thought drowsily of himself, and of that man who wanted to see him who waited to see him. Who waited? Night and day. Waited. A spiteful, but vaporous idea floated through his brain, that such waiting could not be very pleasant to the fellow. Well, let him wait. He would see him soon enough. And for how long? 5 seconds, 5 minutes, say nothing, say something. What? No. Just give him time to take one good look, and then... Suddenly Babalatchi began to speak in a soft voice. Lingard blinked, cleared his throat, sat up straight. You know all now, Toon. Lakamba dwells in the stockaded house of Padalolo. Abdullah has begun to build godowns of plank and stone. And now that Omar is dead, I myself shall depart from this place and live with Lakamba, and speak in his ear. I have served many. The best of them all sleeps in the ground in a white sheet, with nothing to mark his grave, but the ashes of the hut in which he died. Yes, Tuan. The white man destroyed it himself. With a blazing brand in his hand he strode around, shouting to me to come out, shouting to me, who was throwing earth on the body of a great leader. Yes, swearing to me by the name of your God and ours, that he would burn me and her in there, if we did not make haste. I. The white men are very masterful and wise. I dragged her out quickly. Oh, damn it! Exclaimed Lingard, then went on in Malay, speaking earnestly. Listen. That man is not like other white men. You know he is not. He is not a man at all. He is. I don't know. Babalichai lifted his hand deprecatingly. His eye twinkled, and his red-stained big lips, parted by an expressionless grin, uncovered a stumpy row of black teeth filed evenly to the gums. Hi. Not like you. Not like you, he said, increasing the softness of his tones as he neared the object uppermost in his mind during that much-desired interview. Odd like you, Tuan, who are like ourselves, only wiser and stronger. Yet he, also, is full of great cunning, and speaks of you without any respect, after the manner of white men, when they talk of one another. Lingard leaped in his seat, as if he had been prodded. He speaks. What does he say? He shouted. Nay, Tuan, protested the composed Babalatchi. What matters his talk, if he is not a man? I am nothing before you, why should I repeat words of one white man about another? He did boast to Abdullah of having learned much from your wisdom in years past. Other words I have forgotten. Indeed, Tuan, I have. Lingard cut short Babalatchi's protestations by a contemptuous wave of the hand, and reseated himself with dignity. I shall go, said Babalatchi, and the white man will remain here, alone with the spirit of the dead, and with her who has been the delight of his heart. He, being white, cannot hear the voice of those that died. Tell me, Tuan, he went on, looking at Lingard with curiosity, tell me, Tuan. Do you white people ever hear the voices of the invisible ones? We do not, answered Lingard, because those that we cannot see do not speak. Never speak, and never complain with sounds that are not words, exclaimed Babalatchi, doubtingly. T may be so, or your ears are dull. We Malays hear many sounds near the places where men are buried. Tonight I heard. Yes, even I have heard. I do not want to hear any more, he added, nervously. Perhaps I was wrong, when I there are things I regret. The trouble was heavy in his heart when he died. Sometimes I think I was wrong. But I do not want to hear the complaint of invisible lips. Therefore I go, Tuan. Let the unquiet spirit speak to his enemy, the white man who knows not fear, or love, or mercy, knows nothing but contempt and violence. I have been wrong. I have. Hi. He stood for a while with his elbow in the palm of his left hand, the fingers of the other over his lips, as if to stifle the expression of inconvenient remorse. Then, after glancing at the torch, burned out nearly to its end, he moved towards the wall by the chest, fumbled about there and suddenly flung open a large shutter of adobes woven in a light framework of sticks. Lingard swung his legs quickly round the corner of his seat. Hello, he said, surprised. The cloud of smoke stirred, and a slow wisp curled out through the new opening. The torch flickered, hissed, and went out, the glowing end falling on the mat, whence Babalichai snatched it up, and tossed it outside through the open square. It described a vanishing curve of red light, and lay below, shining feebly in the vast darkness. Babalichai remained with his arms stretched out into the empty night. There, he said, You can see the white man's courtyard, tomb, and his house. Can see nothing, answered Lingard, putting his head through the shutter hole. Tis too dark. Wait, Tuan, urged Babalatchi. You have been looking long at the burning torch. You will soon see. Mind the gun, Tuan. It is loaded. There is no flint in it. You could not find a firestone for 100 miles round this spot, said Lingard, testily. Foolish thing to load that gun. I have a stone. I had it from a man wise and pious, that lives in Menangkaba. A very pious man, very good fire. He spoke words over that stone, that make its sparks good. And the gun is good, carry straight and far. Would carry from here to the door of the white man's house, I believe, Tuan. Tidaapa. Never mind your gun, muttered Lingard, peering into the formless darkness. Is that the house, that black thing over there, he asked. Yes, answered Babalatchi, that is his house. He lives there by the will of Abdullah, and shall live there till... Dot dot from where you stand, Tuan, you can look over the fence, and across the courtyard straight at the door from which he comes out every morning, looking like a man that had seen Jehanam in his sleep. Lingard drew his head in. Babalatchi touched his shoulder with a groping hand. Wait a little, Tuan. Sit still. The morning is not far off now, a morning without sun after a night without stars. But there will be light enough to see the man who said not many days ago that he alone has made you less than a child in Sambar. He felt a slight tremor under his hand, but took it off directly, and began feeling all over the lid of the chest, behind Lingard's back, for the gun. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.